August, an exhibition, Derek Hill and the View from Donegal. And the Skibbereen exhibition, Coming Home, Art and the Great Hunger, we feature the Irish famine as one sculpture depicts it. Later this morning, this.
I don't care if I'm Dutch, Irish, English, American. I'm a painter, and it doesn't matter damn whether I'm Irish or English or anything else.
Derek Hill, later. First, we turn to the exhibition, which is running all too appropriately in West Cork, which suffered so calamitously in the Great Famine of 1845 and subsequent years. The exhibition, Coming Home, Art and the Great Hunger, is a selection from Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University, Connecticut, which is the largest famine-related art collection in the world. This exhibition attracted huge crowds when it ran in Dublin Castle earlier this year, and it has now switched to Skibbereen, to the West Cork Art Centre, where it will run until October the 13th. And to mark all of this, we've been exploring the RTE Sound Archive to share with you traces of the Great Famine as represented in the radio archives. We begin with Rowan Gillespie's Famine in Custom House Quay in Dublin, just outside the Custom House under the Loop Line Bridge. When it was installed, the Arts Minister was Sheila de Valera.
And the fact that they're life-size and the fact that you can walk in among them, you can really have a tremendous sense of what it must have been like in their faces and the despair, as I say, that was in their faces. And, of course, the artwork itself is very distinguished. And I think it's just a wonderful piece of modern art that people can feel very proud of and understand its history and look at it not only and appreciate it from the historic point of view, but also from the artistic point of view.
Beside one of the main roads into to Dublin, beside the Liffey, it's a group of six figures.
The sculptor, Rowan Gillespie.
And they're supposed to be in that sort of hollow, empty space of malnutrition where they really don't care. They don't care that there's other people around them. They don't really care where they're going. They're looking vacantly in different directions. The casting of them is unusual in that I used casting techniques which would have been used at the time of the famine, where the actual process of the pouring of the bronze was used in order to give a cracked and torn look with absolutely no machine finishing afterwards. The principle on the casting was that if there was a fault, I was just going to leave it there. So they're totally raw. There's absolutely no concession to prettiness at any stage in them. As a one-man operation, I can't cast bigger than a certain size. So to make a big sculpture, it's easier for me to do lots of figures of the scale that I can cope with, rather than try to do something monumental in its size. And anyway, I didn't think there was anything to be monumental about. I felt that each person was very humble and simple within the setting. There's six figures with a child and a dog right in the background. Now, probably a lot of people say are surprised by the dog. Now, as most Irish people would know anyway, the thing is that the dogs were thriving at the time because they were eating the dead people. So you have the dog in effect is sort of sniffing at the people, and there's the one man in the background there carrying a dead child, which was probably to me the most significant figure in the whole series. That figure probably is the one which I identify most strongly with. Now, with so much talk about Auschwitz and the Holocaust and so on, there's the one figure of a woman at the front who, because I had no photographic evidence of anybody in the famine, they didn't in those days use film to photograph starving people. That figure is actually a figure from a concentration camp, not from the Irish famine at all. But to me, that didn't matter. The sculpture is simply called Famine. It is not called the Great Famine. It is about, well, the struggle to survive for people who haven't had food. The tall man there, my grandfather, he was a very stern man. I was always petrified of him as a child. But anyway, he had the face I wanted, and he made it into the sculpture as well. So those are the three that I think of straight away. to mention. The number, the proportions of the people going out of the country, the number of men compared to the number of women was all correct, you know, that I was finding out the proportion of men leaving the country compared to women. And of course, very few children really did leave the country. Many people thought, well, why don't you have some more children to evoke more of the sort of feeling which people will naturally have towards a starving child? But in fact, the proportions are correct, that there were very few children leaving the country.
Rowan Gillespie talking about his sculpture, Famine, which is permanently at Custom House Quay in Dublin. And indeed, Rowan Gillespie is one of the artists whose work is represented in Quinnipiac and in the current exhibition in the West Cork Art Centre in Skibbereen. And in next week's programme, we'll be hearing traces of what else is in the RTE Sound Archive. Individuals, folklorists and local historians speaking about the oral tradition which kept the memory of the famine alive.
Oh, it was talked about a lot. Actually, I heard an old woman when I was very small, and she had a lot of talk about the famine.
The famine, as remembered in oral tradition and reflected in the RTE Sound Archives, that will be in next week's programme. And the Skibbereen exhibition runs until October the 13th in the West Cork Arts Centre. Next, we turn to an exhibition which has some weeks still to run at Dublin Castle and which acknowledges the contribution made to Donegal and to Ireland by the painter Derek Hill, portrait painter and landscape artist.
Well, all I think is I'm a painter. I've never been included in an exhibition of Irish painters, ever, because the Irish, on the whole, hadn't thought of me as Irish.
Well, Derek Hill was born in England, but lived in Donegal from the early 1950s until his death in 2000.